Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Welcome to A Journey of Transformation Empowerment. You're listening to Antonio T. Smith, Jr., where ideas ignite, change, and possibilities are endless. Before we dive into today's episode, we have something special for our listeners. Today's podcast is brought to you by a groundbreaking book that's reshaping the conversation around Black economic empowerment. It's Resegregation, Volume 1,
The Power Matrix.
A master plan for Black group economics with wealth creation, authored by visionary Antonio T. Smith, Jr. Antonio isn't just an author. He's a former top secret combat special operations intelligence sergeant turned millionaire. His life work championed the economic autonomy and wealth creation within Black communities. In this seminal work, dedicated to teachings of Dr. Claude Anderson, Antonio outlines a comprehensive blueprint covering critical sectors like finance, technology, manufacturing, and more. He blends military discipline with acute understanding of systematic disparity. This isn't just a book, it's a movement, a call to action to create lasting wealth and reshaping the economic narrative. Antonio's vision is clear: drive a significant shift toward Black ownership and control. Listeners, if you've ever wondered about innovative strategies for wealth creation or how technological transformation can uplift the Black communities, then this book is for you. Join Antonio Smith, Jr. on the transformative journey. Pick up your copy of the Resegregation Volume 1, The Power Matrix, today, and be a part of the reshaping future. Now, let's dive into the episode and explore the possibilities that await us.
Hello, Secret to Success podcast family. Welcome back again. Today, I have an amazing guest with us, a guest who understands millennials more than anything I could ever imagine. And I am grateful, ladies and gentlemen. I introduce you to Dr. Philip Zimmerman. Hello, Dr. Zimmerman. How are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic today, Diana. I appreciate y'all having me on the show.
Awesome. We're excited to have you. So, Dr. Zimmerman, if you can please let our audience know more about who you are and exactly what it is that you do.
I am a professional certified coach and also a registered professional engineer, which was a career in my past. And what I do is I work with executives and their teams to help them prepare their millennial talent to basically succeed in their businesses. And I also coach with or work with millennial talent themselves to help them align, develop, and advance along their career path while experiencing work-life balance. So that's what I do. I consult and coach with businesses and industries and their people.
Right. So with that introduction, I now have some questions for you.
All right.
So me being a millennial myself and my growing up watching my parents and my grandparents, you know, my mom's parents were her biological father was an entrepreneur, but her stepfather was a teacher in the school district. Her mother was a nurse, and they both stayed in that industry until they both passed away. Now, my mom is in the medical industry. She has been there my entire life. My dad has worked for the chemical plant in our area my entire life, and he just recently retired. But you have those who are the millennials who are like, when you look at our resumes versus our parents' resumes, you see 2, 3, 4 different types of jobs. And with the extensive research and with everything that you do, why is that? Why are millennials' resumes a little bit more fuller than our parents' resumes would have been?
I think that if you were to look at it, a great question, first off. I think if you were to look at it in a general sense, that's a very, very general, I guess, assessment of generations in the past and their longevity or loyalty to different businesses. It was in the past where someone would go work for an industry, as an example, and they've worked their whole career, 35 years, and they would retire from that career. Mm-hmm. It has a lot to do with what's called the industrial age and security. But I think when I graduated first from college in 1980, and then I got a master's degree in civil engineering in 1981, and when I graduated, I think the average, my dad also worked in industry, and he said that, Philip, you can expect to have at least 7 career changes or positional changes with companies within your lifetime. And within that lifetime, you may actually totally change professions. And I was kind of like, that's crazy. No way. Because, although he had had several different changes himself, but I knew people whose parents had worked at the same place forever. Mm-hmm. But that was really my journey. My journey, I've had 3 or 4 different, totally different changes in my career path. I mean, like major changes in my career path. There's always been a symmetry around engineering or technical fields, scientific fields. But as far as what I've done in that particular genre of activity, I've had 3 different, very, very significantly different careers within that path. So mm-hmm. I think that when millennials first began let me try to address this also, and then let you get to your next question. When I was doing some research, which I'll get into in a minute, looking at the millennial generation, one of the things that was noted in the literature about millennials, this was between 2006 and 2013, a lot of very disparaging articles were written in journal articles and magazines and textbooks and books about who the millennial generation was. And the typical reference was that they were disloyal. They were not loyal to their employers. They were only after the whoever would pay them the highest amount. They didn't want to work. They felt entitled, and there's about the other descriptions that they provided in that literature. And it was in doing literature review for something I was working on that, in regards to the millennial generation, that really shocked me, because at the time I had been teaching in the classroom. That was one of my big changes. I became a high school teacher for 12 wow. years, and in my time in the classroom teaching students, I recognized that the students that I taught were not the individuals that were taking these jobs, or there was something wrong with the jobs that they were taking that was making them do this. And what I discovered in that process was that we had a significant age change, the way we work. We went from what's called industrial age working to a connected age working. And I can get into that as far as what that means or what that means in the working workforce. But your generation was educated and prepared to work in the connected age. And I'll get into that, what that means later in the discussion. It is completely different way of working than people who've historically worked in the industrial age, called the industrial age. And so when your generation started to enter industrial age businesses, they did not find the work that they were prepared for. In fact, they were rejected for what they knew. They were treated as if they didn't know anything. I mean, I have a college degree. You know, let me go to work. But the way that they were asked to work and what they were asked to do was not what they were, how they were educated and prepared. And so they would leave their job to go find what it was that they were looking for. And what you will notice during this time is when Apple was really coming on, blowing up, you know, and Yahoo started to blow up, and the whole e-commerce business started to blow up. And those companies, like Google, you go to an industrial age company today, and I do it often, it's my clients, and they often ask me, how do I make my workplace like a Google, right? That the people love to come to work, and they're all these creatives and stuff. And I tell them, well, you have to operate your business and the model of your business like Google operates their business and their model, which is completely, they're two different ways of looking at the world, two different ways of looking at business, two different ways of looking at how do you make money, two different ways of looking at how do you determine somebody's productivity, what is creativity and innovation. All those things are completely different. And then in summary, what I'll put for your generation, and the reason why that so you're saying our generation has these, you know, within a five-year span or eight-year span, we might have tried three or four different jobs. Part of that reason in there, it's not universal, but part of that reason in there is that your generation was prepared for jobs that had not yet been invented.
Wow.
And are you interested in that as a little aside to go into, or?
Yes, definitely, because I'm definitely going to ask you about the connected age as well.
Good. Okay. So what's your next question, or do you want me to continue with that thought?
No, please continue with that thought, please.
Okay. I was in the classroom teaching high school seniors. Our school wanted to have a I came out of business, executive leadership in business. I owned businesses. I ran businesses, made a lot of money for myself as well as for others. I had a life change at about age 38. I had a spiritual life change, a spiritual experience where I went from believing in Jesus, and I was a Christian, and I knew all the I was reading the Bible all the time. But I didn't have an active relationship with God. I just believed that he existed and that Jesus existed, and I guess I'd find out one day if it was really true. There came a Sunday. I was in a church. We weren't going to the church at the time. We were trying to find a church for our kids to get into a Sunday school. And in the second service, we were in that particular church. The Lord changed me. I mean, he literally changed me. I went from believing that it was true to knowing that it was true. And an inward, truly manifested inward manner that has never changed. It is, my life changed from that moment on. As a result of that, I left the business world. It took me 3 years to get out of it because I was totally enmeshed in it. I ended up going to seminary, to a Baptist seminary in New Orleans, got a Master of Divinity degree. Had no idea what I was going to do. I got out, and as the Lord led me, I ended up teaching at a Christian school. Went there as a science teacher initially, and then became the Bible department head and taught Bible for 12 years. But in this time of teaching these students, I was asked to develop a leadership program for high school seniors, how they can enter into the college, because at that point, and still is, that most students who are Christian in high school lose their faith in college. So how can we prepare our students so that they don't lose their faith in college? And so I came up with this idea of I went into a seminar at a school in Texas that had a leadership academy, and I came back to the school. I presented it to the headmaster. He said, well, can we do something that's unique to our school? And I said, I don't think that'd be impossible. And I spent a Friday night, all day Saturday, all day Sunday, with just this download of, it didn't come from me. It was just like out of my hands onto the computer, with just words and pages and PowerPoint presentation, and it ended up being what was called the Institute of Leadership for the school. And as I started to do the research on actually how to implement this thing, I enrolled at Dallas Theological Seminary in Dallas in a Doctor of Ministry degree in organizational leadership to find out, how do I build something like this? So I said, well, part of what I need to find out is who am I training? Who are these students? What does the research say who millennials are? It was that, when I was doing that research, I discovered this disparity in the workplace between who I knew to be the students and what they were like. I mean, they're energetic, super educated, much more educated than I was ever educated, and just on fire to go and do something great in the world. And yet when they got to the workplace, they were just disparaged and ridiculed by the people who were in the workplace.
Right.
It was about halfway through that research, I recognized, and I was at my computer, I couldn't put it all together. I had, I don't know, 100 journal articles and several books and magazine articles that I was reviewing, and four words came to me. One of them was philosophy, or you can just think of the idea of honesty. How do we know what's true or not, or telling, and that's under this broad category of philosophy. The next one was economics, or how do we make money? How does a person make money? So there's the idea of economics. Next was technology. You know, what role does technology have? And the last one was education. How do people earn education? So I wrote those four phrases down: philosophy, economics, technology, education. And when I went back in the literature and I started looking at it, that's when I realized there was a significant age change. As I've said, you know, I read the Bible every year. And I'm always a student of the Word of God. And it says in Ecclesiastes 1, 9, and 10, what has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done. There is nothing new under the sun. Can one say about anything, look, this is new? It has already existed in the ages before us. So when I saw what was happening in this literature, I said, you know, that this has had to have happened before. And so when I looked at it, just this whole thing with the millennials entering the workforce, this had to have happened before. What I discovered was this, in the area of philosophy or honesty, how do we know what we know? Is that area of philosophy. The Western philosophy has been in control of the Western world, the way Western minds think, for 2,600 years. It started in the 6th century B.C. and lasted until 1950. During that time, it had three different philosophic ages. It started off with what was called ancient philosophy, then 1,100 years later in the 5th century A.D., medieval philosophy came in, lasted another 1,100 years, and then modern philosophy came in the 1600s. And in 1950, the philosophical age died when the seat of Western philosophy in Germany and in France was totally decimated by World War II. And we're living in this period called postmodernism, or postmodern period. And really, postmodernism is anti-philosophy. There's nothing true, there's nothing really knowable other than what you know yourself. So to say what is truth or what is honesty is, it's all a personal construct. And we're still living in that today. Here we are in 2020, still living for that today. It happened in 1950. This change of a philosophical age is only the third time in 2,600 years that Western philosophy has been interrupted, and we've entered into a gray period. This is significant. It is very significant. That's why you see in the world today, and in your generation, was raised in what's called a totally most postmodern culture, where you were taught and raised that there is no ultimate truth. Each person has their own idea of what their truth is. Mm-hmm. And this idea of lying, there really is no such thing as a lie. As long as you can get away with it, get what you want, and nobody gets hurt. In essence, that becomes justice instead of a lie. That becomes your benefit. So all that, and boomers and a lot of Xers were raised in a totally different culture. And so that's the first age shift we had. We had a philosophic age shift, or an age shift of what is truth or what is honesty. It is totally different for a boomer versus a millennial. And it's Yes. It's not because of you. You came up with the idea. It was you were taught those ideas. So that was the first age shift that happened. And the other one was the whole idea of the globalization. The economics changed. Right now we're trying to go back to manufacturing in the United States. But over a 60-year period from the late 1950s all the way until 2010, our manufacturing industry moved to Mexico initially, then to Canada, then to Korea, South Korea, and now to China. And our economy changed as a result of that. Mm-hmm. We started doing global business, used to do local business, you know, buy local. Then it was buy within the state or buy regionally. Now it's buy globally. You know, you never know where you get it. You can order something from Amazon or some other site, but you don't really know ultimately where it's coming from. It's probably coming from China, right, actually. But that changed your whole economy, how we do business. Mm-hmm. The next one was the technology. Boomers and a lot of Xers, but all boomers were raised in this old idea of an industrial age mindset. We were educated in rows and columns with the teacher at the front of the room being the subject matter expert. And millennials, you were taught typically in groups. You maybe still had the rows and columns, but the high school I taught at, they actually sat in a circle or around an oval table, and there was a discussion. There was no – I was a facilitator. Wow. I wasn't the subject matter expert. And the difference between those two things is significant. In the industrial age, you were trained or taught, this is what we do, and this is how we do it, and you will do it the same way and repeat that process. The connected age, we went through three ages. We went through information age, then the technology age, information age, and then the connected age. But in that process, what was happening in education, I wouldn't have understood it unless I had been an educator, was this. Education is not just involved with subject matter knowledge at a grade level. Education as a whole goes all the way through postdoctorate education. And so when you say, if someone's going to get a doctorate degree in, say, 20 years from now in engineering, I'll just use engineering because that's my background, as a civil engineer in 20 years, what are we going to have to teach them in first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, all the way through junior high school, college, in the graduate program that will allow them to occupy a job in 20 years that will be available in civil engineering? In the industrial age, that was well known. We've known those things for 400 years now. We've been in the industrial age for 400 years.
Oh,
you build things, you do things with your hands, you make machines, machines make things.
Right.
Your generation was the first generation where computers started to show up at mom and dad's office at work.
Yeah.
So mom and dad were working on computers. Teachers back in the classroom were saying, wow, these computers have, you know, come into my husband or my wife's business and they're using them at work. I wonder what those computers are going to be like in 20 years. What do we need to teach a first grader today that in 20 years, when these computers get to be whatever they're going to be in 20 years, that they're going to need to know? Well, nobody knew. So they kept teaching it as they did. About late 1980s, early 1990s, desktop computers entered the classroom.
Yep,
then teachers
I remember.
Said, wait a minute, now we have these computers in our classroom. How is this going to affect our teaching of our students? And if our students now have access to this in the classroom, what is that going to be for a job in 20 years when they graduate from college in 20 years? They had the head of the education department at Duke University in 2014 wrote in a book at that time, so that's 6 years ago, that the students that were in elementary school in 2014, 60% of the jobs that they will occupy when they graduate from college have not yet even been invented. Now, that would be just 10 years out. This professor was saying 60%
wow.
of the jobs that they would occupy haven't been invented, and that's just 10 years. So what are you going to do in the next 10 years to educate a student for a job that hasn't been invented? So then education had to reorient itself totally and say, we need to start training students for jobs that have not yet been invented. How do you do that? Well, you train them to ask questions about what they're going to do.
This is
what happened when students entered the workforce. You were probably trained, I'm just saying, you may or may not have, but most millennials that enter the workforce have been trained to ask two questions. What are you doing and how do you do it? And so when they would enter their job, they'd say, okay, I'm here to report for work. And the boomer would, he or she would give them some paper to fill all this stuff out. Now, here's your first job assignment. Go and do this. And they're like, well, what is this? Don't ask me what it is. Just go and do it. You're college educated. You should be able to figure that out. And they go back and sit in their desk, and they go, I have no idea what to do with this. What do they want me to do with this? Yeah. So they go back and say, what do you want me to do with this? And that's where this tension would rise up, because the millennial would ask the boomer, what is it that you're doing? And they would the boomer would say, this is what we're doing. And they would say, why? The big question is why? Why and how? Why are you doing what you're doing and how you're doing what you're doing? And the boomer would get all upset at somebody's asking them why they're doing it. Like, because I said so. You know, go sit down and do your job. See, they're not being cooperative. They're not helping us. And so, but the why question that the millennials were trained to ask was not why they're doing it. They're not, you know, millennials are the most educated generation in human history. Your generation is the, without any doubt, globally, the most educated generation in human history because of all the competition you all had to get into college and to graduate from high school, all the testing that you had, standardized testing you had.
Wow.
We never had to do any of that. We would just, you know, we never had homework, you know, typically. And you all had to do 5 hours of homework. 5 hours of homework a night. You had to get prepared for the SAT, the ACT,
Oh my goodness.
Extracurricular activities. You had to be, you know, some kind of leadership on your resume. We never had any of that stuff. Anyway, so, but the why that they're looking for, that they were trained to ask, is not why they're doing it, because they know why they're being asked to do this. The question why is, I'll give you an example here. Go fill out this paperwork on a permit, say an environmental permit for a client. And they would say, well, why are we doing this? They said, because I said so. No. Okay, I'll listen to your why. Why? What do you mean by why? Why is the client required to fill out this permit? Well, because it's a state regulation.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's always the why.
Yeah. Why is it a state regulation? Well, because they passed a law in 1972 that said they had to do this. This is the millennial asking this question. Why did they pass the law in 1972 that said they had to do this? Because now here we are in 2020 living with something that they passed in 1972. Well, because they had this issue going on at the time that was causing this environment, and this was of an environmental concern. That is the why. There was an environmental concern in 1972 that this law came into effect that is now making everybody fill out these permit applications. With that information, then the student asks, well, how do you do this? Well, we fill out the paperwork here. We have these forms we get from the state. We have to answer all of these questions. And again, the student's like, well, how is this done? In other words, how is what you're doing on this form answering the initial reason why this law was ever brought into place? And the person will probably at that point just say, just go do your job and stop asking questions. But and what I go into businesses and help them and try to help the boomer leadership see and the executive see and their team see and even the millennials see that where this disconnect's coming in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell the boomers, I say, if you would just tell the millennials the why and talk it out with them all the way down to the why is this is being done to your best extent, and then using your vast knowledge of your institutional knowledge within your organization, how you do this and how this is commonly done within your industry, and then assign your millennial team, 1 to 3 of your best millennials you have on staff, that their job is to look at the why and the how, and if they can, to come up with a better, faster, cheaper way to do it than you do it. And typically, And I always challenge the people that do this, and they typically do it. And I said, usually within 3 days, and possibly shorter, they're going to come back to your office, not just with the solution, but with an app on their phone to actually implement it. And they're like, no, really. I said, no, really. They're going to come back because I said, you know, they don't all know how to code. They don't all know how to make an app, but they know a friend who knows how to code and make an app. And once they get the why down, of why it needs to be done, they're going to take off all the stuff that's been done in the last 40 years is out the window. Because we have technologies available today that were not even in the mind of the person who made up the regulation 40 years ago. they're going to come up with a new solution that is better, faster, cheaper, that puts you out of business if it was ever implemented. And I said, that's what you want to discover. Those are the disruptor businesses. And that's what millennials are there. That's why part of the reason why I wrote this book was to unleash millennials into the freedom to do this, because your generation is going to do this. They're not being allowed to do this right now for various reasons within business, because it would just really disrupt the businesses that are doing their business today. But when your generation in 2025, 75% of the global workforce is going to be millennial. Your generation is going to do the work like you want to do the work. And all these things are going to happen anyway. And so that's kind of the background on this change, the two-age, the industrial age and the connected age, and why there was this disparity in the workplace and what I tried to help people do in the process.
No, thank you, because you just – okay, so for our Secrets to Success podcast listeners, I hope you're taking notes. Millennials, I hope you're taking notes so you can understand how to better speak to not only boomers that you work for, but the boomers that are your customers, the boomers that you are partnering with, because if you know how to communicate with them, you can help them understand how to communicate with you. Boomers that we have listening to us, I hope you are taking notes as well, because what you just did, Dr. Zimmerman, was explain so much, and you also explained why the 5 and 6 year olds are always asking the question why. We, us millennials, literally took that why question and took it into our workplace with us. Because if you tell us why you're doing it, like the heart of why you're doing it, we'll do exactly what you just said. We're like, okay, well, if that's why, then I can find an easier, faster way to do it.
Exactly.
That's more cost efficient, and we can switch this up real quick and make it a lot easier on ourselves. Because as millennials, because we're not, if we can find a way to save us time but still do the job effectively and efficiently, we will figure it out. We just have to know why we're doing what we're doing. And if you tell us how to do it, like, okay, so this is why we're doing it. So how are we doing it now? Like, what is the step process? Like, we're not asking you to be smart, Alex. We're not asking you because we don't understand. We just want a more in-depth explanation so we can get a better understanding of your process. And then once you give us your process, then we can break it down to our process and find a way in the new age to be able to break it down. And that actually brought me to another question. When it comes to entrepreneurs, you're finding more entrepreneurs are millennials and Generation Xers. Is that because of the connected age and everything that you just explained to us? Like, instead of us going into the workplace, we're finding the faster, easier, most efficient and effective way to do it, and just starting our own businesses. Is that why you're seeing such a boom in entrepreneurship amongst the millennials and the Xers?
I think that in terms of the Xers, this next thing I will explain to you is, this is the hidden. No one's talking about this, but it's huge. It's called the missing X generation. Boomers, demographically, as far as numbers, have been estimated to be around 80 million people, 80 men and women in the United States. And I guess from an age perspective, a boomer would be like 59 and up to like 74 or 76, something like that.
Okay.
A Xer would be like 58 to 39. That's the Xer range, 58 to 39, somewhere around there. And then a millennial would be 38 to 21. 20 to 38 or 21 to 38. So that would be a millennial.
We all want to add more years to our life and more life to our years. But in order to do that, we need to make a change. And that's what Inside Tracker is all about. Inside Tracker was founded in 2009 by top scientists in aging, genetics, and biometric data from MIT, Tufts, and Howard. Inside Tracker is a personalized health and wellness platform like no other. It's purpose-built to help you live a longer, more productive life. The first time you use Inside Tracker, its patented algorithm analyzes your biometric data and offers you a clearer picture than you've ever had before of what's going on inside your body. And this is exactly what we need. Nothing generalized, but personalized based on your body measurements and calculations that are specific to you. Next, Inside Tracker provides you with a concrete, science-backed action plan for reaching your health and performance goals. Then, using the Inside Tracker app, they track your progress every day, every step of the way. So for a limited time, Secret to Success listeners get 25% off the entire Inside Tracker store. Go to insidetracker.com/success to get your discount code and start using Inside Tracker today, because change is an inside job.
And there's 80 million boomers, and there's 80 to 100 million millennials, depending upon the demographer, because they just really haven't gotten a good idea of how many there actually are. But there's as many or more millennials than there are boomers. Xers that are in the middle, there's only about 40 million Xers, 40 to 45 million generation Xers, which is half of what the boomers are and the millennials are. A lot of people wonder why they were such a small generation. During the time that Xers were being born or conceived, we had the birth control was legalized, abortion was legalized, and we had the Vietnam War. Those three combined, well, you know, you can take abortion, right? 30 million people have been aborted in the United States in the last 40 years, or maybe more than that, 40 million. That might be your millennials, right? I mean, your extras right there, a lot of them. So we've aborted a lot of children. We had a lot of children never conceived because we had birth control. But for whatever reason, by the time millennials came along, we jumped back up. So what that means is that if you're looking for somebody with 25 years of experience who would be an Xer to fill a particular position, there's only half of many of them as the people who are currently holding the position. So for every boomer that retires, or let's say for every boomer that retires, or actually for every two boomers that retire, there's only one Gen Xer who can replace them. And so there's this middle management shortage, because all the boomers are now in their late 50s. The youngest boomers are in the late 50s, you know, about to turn 60. And the people in the middle, there's not enough Xers to take their place. And so for the last 10 years in the United States, we've had this H-1B, I think that's the term of it, for a visa that someone can get to come to the United States and do a job that is not currently being filled by a U.S. citizen. And so a lot of industry, if you're familiar with people working with industry, big industry, they have a lot of foreign nationals in here from India, Iran, Iraq, from Europe, who are doing these middle management jobs. And so they're typically in their 40s or early 50s, and they're doing these middle management jobs. And the reason why they're here is that there are no Xers here in the United States to fill that. And the reason why there's no Xers is they were never born. Once you get that the Xers were never born to be an engineer. They were never born to go into business. They were never born to go into science. They didn't go to first grade because they were never born. And so when you realize that, then what's going to happen as the last of these boomers retire, so if you had 40 million Xers, half the boomers have already retired, those 40 million Xers are probably already occupying a boomer retired position. There was a boomer that was sitting in there before them. For the next boomer that retires, there's no more Xers left to fill their spot. So that means that the 38-year-old millennial is going to have to jump into a position that's normally occupied by a 45 or 48-year-old Xer. And they're just not prepared. Industry just hasn't prepared them because they just haven't recognized the fact that when they put this advertisement out for somebody with 25 years of experience or 20 years of experience, they're not going to get any responses. You know, and so I've also been trying to tell the people I work with, it's time to start training your older millennials to start taking over boomer positions. Right now, you just need to get them ready to step up a level, because they're going to skip a whole managerial level on their way up. So I say that for your listeners out there. If they're in their mid-30s and they're looking to advance, one of the coaching programs I have is to help people align in their career path, how to develop, and advance along their particular career path. And so that development is not for their next job that would be normally that they would get. The advancement that I want them to shoot for is for that boomer position that's going to come open in the next 3 to 5 years. And get ready to take that position, because there's not going to be any other options or very few other options for the companies to gain from the outside the company. So there's a real issue in the workplace in regards to generational changes. I'm not sure if that answered your question.
No, it did. It did. Thank you very much. And so that brings me to my next question. So the name of your book is Unleash the Millennials and Save the World. So why did you title it that, and what do you mean by Unleash the Millennials and Save the World?
Well, a great question, and it goes back to everything we've just been talking about. The world is about to change. In my book, it's available on Amazon in paperback and also in Kindle ebook. It's under the title "Unleash the Millennials and Save the World." What I have in there is the reality of something I call a millennium change cycle. And what I mean by that is that as you look back on the past, remember nothing is new under the sun. Whatever is here has been before. So when you look back on the past, of when you look at like times that we were living in right now, if you looked back in the past where you've had such a tremendous generational change between the boomers and Xers and the millennials, which are a unique, the most educated generation in human history. I can't reemphasize that enough globally. What happens typically if you look back in the past when something like this happens, and it doesn't happen frequently.
I am determined to be rich.
The middle class is not for me.
I need news that cares about me.
And not news that's going to scare me or make me mad at another people.
I need news without politics.
And I want news that will point me to the money.
This is the news where it happens.
The moments that change the world.
These are the stories we need.
The info that we care about.
We only give you news
that puts money in your pocket.
And the news
that gives us an advantage.
This is the work that continues.
Who we are today.
And what we can become.
Tomorrow.
That's it.
This is where news without agendas can lead us.
Your wealth matters.
This is why more perspectives
make us stronger.
And how our mission can inspire
tomorrow.
This is journalism that helps the world we live in.
This
is
Mexit News.
But it has happened in the past, and everything changes. I'm talking about everything changes, so that within 15 or 20 years, you will not recognize the future. If you were trying to guess what the future is going to look like today, you wouldn't be able to even guess it. It's kind of like occupying jobs that had not yet been invented. And when you're in, and I say it's going to happen by 2040. If you were to, and you'll be living in 2040. Myself, with good health and exercise, I should be in 2040. But as we look back in 2020 and 20 years, we're not going to recognize the way that we're living in 2040. We're not going to recognize how we used to live. And what I mean by that is that if you looked at this all goes back to philosophy and science. For the last 100 years and actually more, philosophy, the proponents of philosophy came out in the late 1700s and early 1800s to say that God does not exist. They are finally willing to admit that God does not exist. There is no God. We just need to figure out how to be human. And without the existence of God or gods, no Greek gods or Roman gods or Christian gods or Muslim gods or Hindu gods, no gods exist. When Darwinism presented his famous thesis on the evolution of man, that gave the philosophic atheists the ability to say, you see, there's proof there is no God. We are an evolved species. We're just a cosmic accident. And with that, so since about the 1860s all the way through today, the academy within sciences and philosophy and even theology in a lot of areas have eliminated the whole concept or idea of God. And actually what they eliminated also was anything outside the physical realm. They became what was called philosophical materialists. All that exists is the material world. There is no spiritual realm, where in the universe is in essence in a closed system. So all the mathematics that was first done by Maxwell and Planck and Einstein and all these guys who are the foundational, you know, fathers of the sciences that we have today, were under this understanding that we were living in a closed system. So they had to do all their math and all their calculations with this idea that there is no outside source of energy. There is no outside source of input from outside of our space-time dominion in which we live. Well, what we've come to discover in the last, and so as a result of that, nobody could talk about anything being open, anything outside the closed system. You couldn't bring theology or God into any of the sciences or anything. You were just ridiculed and kicked out of the collegiate academy. You lost your position, your college positions. Even if you were a tenured professor, you'd be pushed out of the university if you tried to bring any semblance of God or gods or any kind of spiritualness or anything operating outside this closed system. There's nothing other than physical. Well, what they've discovered in the last 50 years doing science has indicated, all the sciences are indicated, that this is not a closed system, meaning that there is something going on. There's input from what they call the vacuum, and it's not just like you suck air out, but there, the idea of a vacuum, the space vacuum. If you go leave the planetaries, leave Earth, and you go out and sit on the space station, and you were to walk outside without a space suit, you would soon encounter the vacuum of space. Most people always thought that it was empty. There was nothing there. It was just empty. Well, it's not empty. It's full of stuff. The vacuum is full of stuff. And subatomic particle physics studies that they've been doing have shown that in this, when you get down to what they call zero-point energy within this vacuum system, there is a great conflict going on between the material realm and the non-material realm at that interface between the physical realm and the non-physical realm, where they've been able to identify things pop in and then they pop back out. They pop into the physical realm, and then they pop back out of the physical realm. And in that interchange, there's a lot of energy that's exchanged. And they call it zero-point energy as a result of that. That's where there is a whole new realm of energy systems that are currently being researched and developed that's trying to harness this, what they call zero-point energy, where there's energy coming from outside of our space-time domain. It's coming from somewhere else. So they're trying to harness that. Your generation, that's the first one. The next one, I'll get back to how your generation is going to interact with this and why unleash the millennials and save the world. The next one to come out is this, the solving of the human genome. You know, when Darwin made his theory of evolution, they thought of the cells just as a blob. You know, they just thought the cell was just a blob. Well, in the blob, we've now discovered there's all kinds of mini machines in there. And inside the nucleus of the blob, there's this DNA strand and an RNA strand. And on that DNA strand are all the assembly instructions for every cell in the body, and including the cells of the that make up the machines that do all the processing within the cells. It's unbelievable. It's over like 2 billion characters long. If you were to literally stretch out the DNA strand, because it is actually a strand of that's inside the nucleus of the cell, it would be over 6 feet long. There's something that's over 6 feet long in the nucleus of each cell, and that in the assembly, those assembly instructions in the nucleus of each cell determines how everything on your entire body is assembled. Well, that is information, and it's not just random information, randomly assembled. It's assembly instruction information to create a machine that's then going to work in the body to create your heart, then your heart valve, and all the cells that are working in your heart valve. It's unbelievable. As a result of that, they've come to recognize that that information did not come from here. So when they talk to the biologists who are now what's called neo-Darwinists, because they still don't know where life came from. And they still don't know how we evolved, because there's no true evidence for evolution, for macroevolution, large-scale evolution from from a cat going to a lion, not a lion, but a cat going to a bird or something like that, you know, a species change. There's no direct evidence of a species change. But there is direct evidence that this language that's here, this information that's here, did not come from here. And how they determine that is that if they just use random mutation, so you got to take 2 billion characters, and the DNA strand has to be perfect the first time. In other words, if there's an error in the DNA strand, it won't make what it's trying to make. It's a failure. So the whole thing has to be lined up perfect the first time. And so the odds of making that, or the chances of making that, are more than all of the particles in the universe. If all of the particles in the universe were to bump up against each other, that would be the random, you know, the random collision that would cause the mutation. There's not enough particles in the universe for that to occur. And the time that would be required to occur is in the billions of years beyond what they even think is the longest extent the Earth has ever been here. So they realize that the life on the Earth as we explain it biologically is not explainable because of this thing of DNA. So now what they've said is that we're, you know, some have postulated, Richard Dawkins is one of them, the postulates were actually an alien implant. There's aliens from other star systems that have had the billions of years to evolve. They came to Earth, saw it was a nice place of habitation to have life, and so they seeded genetic material on the Earth, and that's where we came from. And they only say that because they have no other explanation. Again, this goes back to this idea of having an open system or a closed system. On the closed system, there was no ability to even think about God or gods or somehow that we were created from the outside, that we just didn't happen to pop here by accident. Once you get that genetic information, it opens the door for this idea of theology to re-enter back in. Well, did God really place us here? I mean, that's a valid question. Is there a design in the universe? That's a valid question. Where did this design of the universe come from? So then you have this whole other thing with cosmology of the fine-tuning of the universe. I won't get into all that, but as you get into that, it's unbelievable how fine-tuned the universe is, that even if the gravitational, the force of gravity, was changed even like a little, like 1 to the 10 to the minus 15th power, I mean, like just a small smidgen, the gravity, we wouldn't exist. Nothing bigger than a grain of sand would even exist. And there's like 15 of these principles, these cosmological principles or laws that are out there that if anyone were changed by any of the minutest amount, we wouldn't be here. And so that's become known as the anthropic principle, that says that science indicates that human life on the Earth was designed for the very purpose of discovering that human life is on the Earth. Because there's no other explanation for it. We're here. We're on the Earth. We know that. How did we get here? Well, it had to have been, and these are atheists who are saying this, it had to have been designed for that exact purpose, that the Earth is exactly where it is in our galaxy to allow us to do cosmological investigations. The moon is exactly the size to see the coronosphere of the sun during an eclipse that provides us the ability to tell what gases are on the sun, therefore be able to make cosmological interpretations of other suns that we see out there. So all that to say is that what science has been able to reveal in the last 50 years has indicated there's not a closed system. So this idea of unleashing the millennials is to unleash the millennials in going and to investigate each of those areas. In this area of truth and honesty, what is really true, what is really honest? And what they will discover is initially they will have a lot of pushback from seniors, which are late 70s, early 80s, into their hundreds. The senior generation and the boomer generation that have been pushing this false narrative for their entire careers, that there is a closed system, they are going to push back very hard because this is what they've taught forever. And part of it's because that's what they believe. They don't believe in an open system. They never thought that there was an open system. Another reason why is that they don't want to have taught a lie. But what the millennial generation is going to discover as your generation goes and starts looking at these things, because of from the perspective of why is this being done? Why are you doing science like you're doing science? You're going to discover that the a priori or the prior assumptions that scientists have made are wrong. And that they are wrong to such a significant degree that everything is going to change once you discover how to harness what is really right. And this idea of saving the world, is because what you're going to discover can either have a very great consequence for humankind or a very negative consequence for humankind. And it's all going to enter into the workforce. Everything that's being done is going to enter into the workforce eventually. So like right now, the first thing that's coming in is AI, right? Artificial intelligence coming into the workforce. And in 3 years, 3 to 5 years, especially after we get out of this, our current situation in the United States and start progressing again toward technology-driven access of artificial intelligence, it's going to come and replace a lot of jobs that are currently being done by humans are going to be done by machines. And what control do we give those machines? How much control do we give a machine? I think I just saw a commercial for a television that talked about AI gone wild. There's a whole show that they're developing on this AI gone wild. It's going to kill people and all this kind of stuff. The question is, the reality is millennials are the only generation that have the technical wherewithal and the mindset to be able to handle this, because this, we have never encountered this. Boomers have never encountered something like this that they have to handle. We don't know what to do. Your generation was trained to address this situation. You don't necessarily know what to do right now, but you'll figure it out. And the idea of saving the world is to figure it out before we destroy ourselves with it, with either AI technology or some human genetic clone that we make, or some genetic change that we make in the animal kingdom or in the agricultural realm. There's all kinds of very scary stuff that's out there in regards to what we could actually do today. But in 10 years, what can we do is going to be could be catastrophic. And so I write this, again, this idea of saving the world, is that my prayer is that the millennial generation, within your generation, will rise up, scientists and engineers and theologians and mathematicians who will, in an academic setting, in the college setting, start to ask the why and how questions that they're asking once they get to work, and stop trusting and believing that what they're being told is true. We have been, as a boomer myself, I can say that our generation, I'm just speaking generationally, has lied to the Xers and the millennials. And it wasn't me. I haven't known any different, I guess. But I've carried on that lie because I say, oh, yes, the theory of relativity of the Einstein is absolutely true or whatever. I don't know that really to be the case. So your generation needs to go and find out what was Einstein saying and how is it impacted by an open system. Genetics, this is what science believes about evolution, biological evolution. What happens in an open system? So that you can truly solve the world. I think that in the whole idea of free energy and anti-gravitational flight and all that, I think all that technology has already been developed. I think it's already here, but no one has been allowed access to it for a lot of various reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, the world's run on energy, right? You saw what happened when oil dropped to $10 a barrel. Same time the pandemic started, was mm-hmm. the whole United States industry went crazy. The oil industry went crazy. $10 a barrel. They cost them $20 a barrel to drill the well. That didn't even get it to the refinery. You know, they got to be at $40 or above. At $10, it's unbelievable. Well, if you come in with free energy, doesn't require oil at all, that everybody can hook up their own home to a machine that's going to power their house with no outside source, that's what this free energy, that's how revolutionary this is, that the economics of the world would have a whole lot to say about whether or not they would want that implemented. And if this is, and this is the thing that I've been hearing, or as I've studied this more and more, is how are you going to tax that? Your generation is going to have to figure that out. Right now, oil and gas is taxed. Either it's taxed at the pump, it's taxed when it's taken out of the ground, it's taxed as it's refined, it's taxed everywhere it can be taxed. And so the energy that we use when you turn on the light, there's a tax on your electric bill. Well, that's going to the government. Well, if you have this idea of free energy, this is just one area, but if you have this idea of free energy where you're getting a machine that's outside of your house, it's very small. It's not as big as an air conditioner or smaller, that's powering your entire house, and there's nothing you have to pay for other than maintenance of the machine. How are they going to collect a tax on that? they're not.
Right.
So your generation is going to have to deal with that of how do we pay for things that we want to do as from a tax perspective. How do we re-gauge our taxes? How is the millennial generation going to save the world from global debt? This is a huge one. I mean, we've gotten ourselves in this mess. The boomers did, and we've been very greedy, and we just, by the way, spent another $8 trillion of your money that you're going to have to repay one day to the Treasury for this pandemic relief. But that's really the first debt we've started to entail. I think Bush was one of the first ones that actually went into debt, and then Obama went into debt, doubled Bush's debt, and then we've quadrupled the debt with this pandemic. It's been unbelievable, but we're still not debt-laden. We're still not a debt-laden country. We've got a lot of debt, but we can pay it off. We're still not as indebted as we were after World War II. After World War II, we went into a whole lot of debt to rebuild our country as well as the rest of the world. So we're still not there yet, but the rest of the world is in extreme debt. I think I heard Ireland's debt to GDP, gross domestic product, is like, I don't know, 1,500% or 2,000%, meaning that if they took everything that they made as gross domestic product and sold and took all of it, not just the tax revenue off the gross domestic product, but took the gross domestic product itself, it would take them 2,000 years just to repay the debt. They're never going to repay their debt. And there's many countries out there that are never going to repay their debt. It's a game that the World Bank plays and all the banks play. It's just a game, all this money. So your generation is going to have to figure out, how do we eliminate this debt globally so that we can get back on an even playing field? And so that's another thing about saving the world. Again, this idea of saving the world, get your generation to start investigating this and find, what is the truth? How did we get in this debt? What does this debt really mean? It's all based on trust. Money's based upon trust in the ability to what is backing this money. So that's the idea of unleash the millennials to save the world. There's a lot to be done to save the world, and your generation is the generation to do it.
Wow, thank you. I've never thought about, when you said for us to save the world, I've never thought about everything that you mentioned. Like we hear about how Social Security is going to be, it may not even be available for us, you know, or even for those who are retiring now. And so that's what we hear about. We hear about things like that, but we don't think about the debt of the United States versus the world. Like, we don't think about how are we going to clear that up. We know that things are hard, and it's up to us to figure out a way, but we don't know specifically. So thank you for naming specifics, because when it comes to being an entrepreneur, the greatest way to be an entrepreneur is to find a way to be innovative. So with everything that you just said, you know, if we as millennials read your book and pull out, you know, the things that we can do to save the world, then we can definitely get into a position where we can be more innovative than we already are. So we can, because there was a part that you, I was reading, you said, you know, millennials will be the ones to save the world for the generation, the next generation and the generation after that. What we do think about are our kids and our grandkids, like exactly what world are they going to look at? And if we have a better understanding, like you were saying earlier, the why, if you give us the why, we can turn it around and figure it out. But if you don't give us the why, we have to figure it out on our own, and it'll take us a little longer. So thank you, because you writing your book will not only help, you know, not only help the boomers, but also help us millennials have a better understanding of, like you said, we have this huge debt, and if we don't figure it out, it's going to be a rough world for our kids and our grandkids. So thank you very much, Dr. Zimmer.
Yeah, let me ask you a question. Do you have a favorite superhero? Do you have a favorite superhero?
Now, I actually like... I actually like Jean, the Phoenix. She has her power. she doesn't have just one ability. Like, her power is strong enough to take on the abilities or the powers of everyone else. Like, she can control the wind of change. She can bend it unless she wanted to, because her mind is that strong. So I would say it would be Jean, but not Jean as in Jean when she's defeated. Because that's when she can just let go and unleash all her powers.
When I say, do you have a favorite superhero? What is the role of the superhero in your mind? What is the role when you think of a superhero? What's the role of the superhero?
The role of the superhero to me is someone who sees what's wrong and finds a solution, or sees the wrong path that we're going down, and they create something to prevent that path, or they educate you on what you're doing. But more importantly, because they love work in the dark. You never know that they're actually doing what they're doing. All you see are the results of what they do, and the results always turn out better for you in the end.
Right, and that's who your generation is. You were prepared as a generation to be the superheroes that will save this world. I just want you to know that if you look back on history, that it's never the generation that gets the world into a mess that saves the world. It's always the generation that's coming up that has been prepared to address the uniqueness of the times that they find themselves in. Millennials are finding themselves in a time when in the United States, we're having this discussion, and sometimes a violent discussion, of where we want to go, how we govern ourselves. Do we want to live under a socialistic, communistic system, or do we want to live under a free market capitalistic system? Mm-hmm. That's a discussion that's going on. So no matter which end the result's going to be, the reality is that we're going to live under whatever system that wins out. But when you go down to what's underlying the truth of those systems, one system, the socialistic communistic agenda, is the old, you call it the industrial age mindset. It was thought of in the 1700s, early 1800s, as being a system of government to live under. It's been tried many times. It has always failed. Because it's an industrial age system. We are in it. We're now actually in a connected age. Your generation has the opportunity to look at where we are. How do we live societally? How do we treat each other? How do we treat people from different countries? How do we trade with people from different countries? Your generation has global friends. My generation, boomers, we'd be lucky if we have a friend in the next state. I mean, y'all have connections with people around the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and our generation and generations prior to us have tried over the last, in the 20th century, which was supposed to be the century to end all centuries, peace and security across the whole earth, brought in the deadliest wars. I think they say we killed 180 million people. More people died in wars and in conflicts and internal conflicts, revolutions in the world in the 1900s than at any time in the history of the world combined. So you add up all the worlds, all the wars, all the revolutions, all the stuff that people did since the beginning of time. More people died in the 1900s as a result of that than any other time in human history. That's who boomers and seniors are. That's where we were educated in. That's where we came out of. That's where this socialism comes out of. That's where this agnosticism, atheism comes out of. Your generation was raised on a clean slate. You weren't taught that there was a God or that there wasn't a God. It's whatever you wanted to believe. You're perfectly right to and feel free to believe that way. Your generation is the first generation in probably well over 1,000 years that has the opportunity to look at the world as it is today and say, what really is this reality that we're living in? if we get to be the determiner of what it is, what really is it? And again, I'm trusting that the millennials that will step up and start to investigate these areas, we'll do it in such a way that they'll go for truth. that they're not going to go for a lie. They're going to go for truth and something that they can, in fact, say this is where the evidence points. They don't have to. They're not going to be restricted by someone who says you can't look there, even though the evidence is pointing over there. You can't look there. There's nobody going to be saying that to you anymore because they're all going to be dead. Your generation gets to stand up and say, hey, where is this? Where does this lead us? And how can we best orchestrate the things that we know that are true in a manner that allows humanity to coexist in a way that does bring peace on the earth and allows individual freedom, whether that's religious freedom or freedom not to be religious. I'm not saying as a Christian that it would have to be forced. It would be forced to be Christian, because that's between God and the individual, right? The relationship is between God and the individual. If there's individuals in the world that don't know God or don't care to know God, they should be allowed to continue as they are, you know. And it's just the way it works. The world's always been the world, and until the end of the world, it's not going to change. And so, how can we coexist in a world that has that as a framework? And I'm very hopeful that your generation is the generation that will do that for us.
Well, I thank you, Dr. Zimmerman. I do. You've pressed on quite a few things that us as millennials actually do think about. Like we sit there and we saw the age of don't ask questions, just do. Like, and we've sat here and we've watched our parents, their parents. Like we've seen the results of our grandparents' decisions, and we're sitting here and we're watching the results of our parents' decisions, and we're like, okay, what are we going to have to do to make sure that this doesn't happen to us? You know, exactly. with the internet, we were able to pay more attention to foreign trade, foreign politics, you know, foreign communications. We dig deeper into other cultures so that we can understand them, because we have a different understanding than our parents and our grandparents. You know, our understanding is we all have to work together. So in order for us to do that, so over here in this country, this is what they're dealing with, and this is how it's affecting us here. Over here in this country, this is what they're dealing with, and this is how it's affecting us here. So how can we all come together as a globe, as the human race, to fix this issue so our children don't have to deal with this and their children don't have to fix any issues? You know, so you have pointed out a lot of things that we don't. You have verbalized a lot of things that us millennials do think about, you know, and you've opened up an entirely different aspect for, you know, the generation before us. So there is a better understanding. Like in Antonio's network, we have boomers, Xers, and millennials. Like we have all three generations.
Yeah, wow.
And we've sat there and we've listened to, you know, the boomers tell us, you know, yeah, we had to do this and figure this out, you know. Or as a millennial, I've actually spoken to boomers and they're like, thank you for your patience when it comes to trying to explain something to them or help them with something, because we do understand that there is a communication barrier. It's a huge communication barrier. But I thank you, Dr. Zimmerman, for taking the time and actually paying attention to the different generations and the barrier and actually saying, okay, look, yes, this is how it was, but this is what millennials are doing. When you first started talking and you broke down the we always ask why, and we don't ask why out of being disrespectful, like, why should I have to do this, but okay, so why do we do this? You know, when you broke that down, you literally just, you broke down the barrier right there. Whatever wall there was between us that we couldn't understand, you broke it down there, because that's exactly why we ask why.
It is the perfect question to ask in the time in which we live.
Mm-hmm.
Because of all the things that are going on, because there's truths that have to be uncovered, there's ways that we do things that have to change. there's technologies that are available to us that will radically change the world for good or for evil. And so that you have to be able to ask those questions of why something is being done, because the decision, what you will discover as your generation looks at this, it's all seated in conversations and discussions from the 1800s, typically. We're doing all of this stuff because of at a time when man didn't really realize we were anything other than we knew we were human, but we had very little knowledge about the cell, and we had no knowledge about subatomic particle physics at all. And so we made all these assumptions about this is how we're supposed to live, and this is what work means. And your generation is now at a time when we know that's not, a lot of that is not true, or there's a lot of areas where it needs to be refined. And so I would say for your listeners that are entrepreneurial and they want to do something creative and innovative, look in these areas that are just now being opened up, because they are going to be opened up in a big way in the next 3 to 5 years. That's AI technology, free energy, what to do about monetary policy. Oh, my gosh. And so somebody who's getting into finance right now and start looking at monetary policy. It's huge in debt. Yeah. I mean, we have more debt. You were talking about Social Security, and then I'll end here with a brief summary. But you were talking about Social Security. The reality is that I think that our debt load of what's called unfunded mandates that we have for, like, Social Security, retirement, and it's not just our Social Security, but like retirement for the post office, retirement for all the government workers and the school teachers and stuff. So it's like $174 trillion. We can never repay that. The government already knows that we can never repay that. And they don't know what they're going to do about that. Nobody knows. That's why your generation has to go up and say, this is stupid. You know, since we're using computers, we can just keep adding zeros to the end of it and just pretend that this is not really real and let the world continue to operate. But we're lying to the rest of the world when we do that. Right. And so that is to figure out how to regauge everything, how to take all the debt away and how to just start over. Your generation will figure that out. And it's going to happen quick. This is not something that's going to happen in 20 years. This is something that's going to happen in the next 3 to 5 years, I'm certain. Because your generation is going to, when it's 75% of the global workforce in 2025, is going to be millennial, because half the Xers aren't there. Your generation is going to be able to make all these decisions. And so there's not going to be a boomer standing in your way to say, no, you can't do that, or this is the way you should do it. Your generation is going to be saying, this is what needs to be done. This is what we know of the situation. This is what needs to be done. And this is the right thing to do, and then you're going to do it. In my book, I also have a lot of – I'm a professional coach. I have a lot of coaching in there as far as coaching programs and coaching process for companies if they're interested. How do I start coaching, and how do I coach my millennial talent? I've got a whole program in my book on how to coach millennial talent to get them aligned, how to allow them to start identifying development opportunities within the organization, advancement opportunities within the organization, all with overemphasis or emphasis of work-life balance. And that's in my book as well. So awesome. I appreciate the time that you've given me today. Do you have any other questions?
Yes. If you can please let our audience know where they can find your book and how they can find you and contact you for coaching services as well.
That's perfect. If they want to find the book, it's on Amazon, Amazon.com. They can also go to unleashthemillennials.com, unleashthemillennials.com, all one word, and that's my book page. And you'll get information on my book, and it's also it's going to send you to Amazon to order it off of Amazon. And then it's all, like I said, paperback and a Kindle ebook. And it'll also have links to my other businesses. I do my coaching in a company called Engineering Leadership Design Group, and also Zimmerman Coaching Group. You'll see links to that at the unleashmillennials.com website as well. So that's where you go. Unleashthemillennials.com will get you in contact with me, and just email me. Let me know you heard me on Antonio's show with Diana, and I'd be happy to respond to you and help you in any way I can.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Zimmerman. Ladies and gentlemen, we will also make sure that we put all of Dr. Zimmerman's contact information as well that he just mentioned in the show notes so you can click and go directly to them. Dr. Zimmerman, thank you so very much for your time today. We are so grateful to have had you with us. Thank you for the work that you are doing. Do you have any final words that you would like to leave with our audience?
I would just say for the millennials that are listening, be the superhero that you know you are and that you were created to be, and pursue that particular power that you have to change the world. And for the Xers, same thing. A lot of you are superheroes as well. Boomers, you're to really play the role of the sage advisor, not to get in the superhero's way, but to provide the institutional knowledge about your business and your company that those superheroes need in order for them to rescue your company and transform your company from an industrial age company in industrial age practices to a connected age company with connected age practices, and watch your profits soar. That's what it's all about, making money and treating people well. And you do that, you let your millennials in charge and to transform your company, you'll see both. People treated very well and making a lot of money.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Zimmerman. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of the Secrets of Success podcast. Looking forward to hearing back from you. Remember to follow us, subscribe, and download as well. Everyone have an amazing and prosperous evening. Thank you.
Thank you.
When the pandemic began, I had the biggest problem in the world. Not making money. The pandemic was actually quite a blessing for me, as it almost made me a billionaire. I came really close. So the pandemic was a blessing. It was hiring people. And get this, everybody. I had 48 job positions open during the pandemic. $22 an hour with paid training. And I could not find a single person for 2 years to fit any of those 48 job positions. Hear me well. 48 job positions, $22 an hour, paid training, and I couldn't find someone, not one person, for those job positions. Now, is it because I hire slowly? True. But it's because I wasn't using ZipRecruiter, and that's a fact. I wasn't getting to the right people for the right position to fit my right culture. And there are so many different things that you can do this summer. As a matter of fact, you can free up as much time as you want to. But if you're not using ZipRecruiter, you're probably not going to free up that time if you're attempting to hire people. So what is ZipRecruiter? What is probably the greatest job finder that's out there? And that's why you need ZipRecruiter. You need it so you can find the right candidates. Now, it's not that ZipRecruiter helps you find jobs. It's more accurately that ZipRecruiter takes your culture, takes your job, takes what you're looking for, and immediately matches them with the perfect candidate. And if they can't find a perfect candidate, they will skip over that person and then give you the perfect candidate for you. ZipRecruiter uses one of its most powerful tools, which is the technology itself, to match the right candidates up with your job. You can easily review their recommendations and easily review their recommended candidates and invite these candidates to apply for your top positions. Additionally, ZipRecruiter has a complete suite of tools that makes it easy for you to filter out, review, and rate candidates. 4 out of 5 employees have been used by 4 out of 5 employers on ZipRecruiter. It is a blessing. And no wonder ZipRecruiter is rated number one hiring site in the world based on G2 satisfaction ratings as of this year, January 1st. My friends, soak up everything I said. It's not an ad. This is a personal testimony of how I found the right people to sit in the right seat on the right bus. Without ZipRecruiter, it wouldn't have been possible. So how do you take advantage of what I'm talking about? Well, you go to ZipRecruiter.com/B2B. All spelled the regular way. That's Zip, Z-I-P, Recruiter, R-E-C-R-U-I-T-E-R, ZipRecruiter.com/B2B. And I promise you, you will be grateful that you did so. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/B2B. It's also in the show notes.